Chapter 84, The Sun King and the Huguenots. In 1643, a young king ascended the throne of France. Louis XIII had died, and this new king occupied his place. He wore the royal crown for 72 years. He was still only a child when his father died, and at that time he was still unable to rule. For that reason, someone else ruled in the place of Louis XIV. In the previous chapter, we told you one thing and another about Cardinal Richelieu. After him, Cardinal Mazarin became the most powerful one in France. But when he died in 1661, Louis XIV himself took the government in hand and has guided France for 54 years. Louis XIV was a wicked monarch and a staunch Roman Catholic. Besides, he was under the influence of the unscrupulous Jesuits, who seized all means to break the power of the Huguenots and to again deprive them of the liberty which they had. Years of suffering and oppression now broke out for the Huguenots, and since they had lost their fortresses, they could no longer do anything. Slowly on, the Huguenots were forced back. They were despised and plagued. They were pushed back in everything. The Edict of Nantes, in which freedom of religion and freedom of conscience was promised them, was still in existence. But every time that treaty was violated and broken, the Jesuits took care of that. They taught that it was not necessary to keep promises which have been made to heretics. They could safely be broken. It began slowly on. The Jesuits were crafty. No, the Huguenots must not be fiercely persecuted all at once, for then the possibility would be great that another bloody Huguenot war would arise. Then the Huguenots, brought to desperation, would take to arms, and that must be prevented, for then France would suffer too many casualties. Step by step they were forced back. They tried in all sorts of ways to bring the Huguenots back into the Roman Catholic Church. In honest ways? Why, no, that was not necessary for those heretics. For that reason, we wrote in all sorts of ways. May we mention a few instances? Just listen. If somewhere a Huguenot was lying upon his deathbed, then suddenly, without being asked, a Roman Catholic priest would enter that home. The family and the nearest acquaintances stood by that dying one. Unashamed, that Roman Catholic priest would also place himself at the bedside. Very friendly and with flattering words, that clergyman would try to bring that dying Huguenot back to the Roman Catholic faith again. He asked him if he was not sorry that he had left the Roman Catholic faith. He asked him, now that he was so close to death, if he wanted to become Roman Catholic again. Wouldn't that be much better? When then such a Huguenot, who was often too sick to rightly understand what it was all about, consented to one thing and another, then the priest went away grinning and told everywhere that that Huguenot had repented upon his deathbed and with sorrow had returned to the Roman Catholic Church. But the Roman Catholics not only concerned themselves with the dying, oh no, the living also received a turn. Little children of 6 or 7 years old were asked if they would become Roman Catholic again. All sorts of nice promises were made to such a child. It is self-evident that those children did not understand what it was all about. They looked at the priest with eyes large with amazement, but that which had been promised them caused their faces to shine with joy. They said, "Yes." Then they were told to only repeat after them, "I abjure my faith." And when these children repeated that, then they were taken along and put up with Roman Catholic families or taken up in monasteries, where henceforth they were brought up as Roman Catholic. After that, those poor little ones were never again allowed to return to their fathers or mothers. Besides, the parents had to pay for their board. More shameful injustice cannot be imagined. If such a Huguenot father or mother went to complain, then they were told snappishly that the children wanted it themselves and had returned voluntarily to the Roman Catholic Church. Oh, how many bitter tears had been shed in the homes of the Huguenots because such parents had lost their children permanently. How mean, isn't that so? But the Roman Catholic priests did not shrink back from that. Did it not concern the salvation of the children? Well then, every means is permissible. If they became faithful Roman Catholic subjects again, the object was obtained. God alone knows how many children have been taken away from their parents in this manner. The Huguenots stood powerless over against all those base practices. If a Huguenot girl married a Roman Catholic boy, or a Huguenot boy married a Roman Catholic girl, then the children from such a marriage had to be brought up Roman Catholic. They were compelled to that. If, through reverses such as sickness or crop failure, a Huguenot had become impoverished so that he had made debts, then a Roman Catholic priest came to visit him and offered him a large sum of money. All at once he would be released from all cares and all troubles. He need not pay that money back either. That was given to him. But then that Huguenot must become Roman Catholic again. That was the only thing he was asked to do. What a heavy temptation for those people, because with that money they could pay all their debts and all at once they were on the top again. Indeed, there have been many Huguenots who succumbed to that temptation and accepted that money. In this and other similar ways, they tried to bribe the Huguenots. Rome could spare money for that. Yes, but, you will say, did they do that then? And then they surely were not good Huguenots. Certainly, that is true. Those who became Roman Catholic again to get rid of their debts and to be delivered out of their temporal difficulties were no real Huguenots. We must not be too astonished that such things took place. Let us take a look about us. How many people are there nowadays who are members of one or the other church, but who live on indifferently? How many are there among us who sometimes do not come to church for months? Really, the entire religion is an indifferent thing to them. Is that not true at times? It is sad enough that we must say this, but alas, it is the truth. Well then, such people were also among the Huguenots at that time, and just among those people the Roman Catholic priests labored with their money. If they were successful, then they trumpeted all around that they had converted so many Huguenots again. Thus we could mention many more instances. The Huguenots were also vexed and pushed back in other ways. Instances? If somewhere a Huguenot man or woman, child or gray-haired one had died, then those mortal remains were not permitted to be buried as usual at midday. Oh no, that had to be done very early in the morning or late in the evening. Why? They also had their rights, didn't they? the Edict of Nantes was still in effect, was it not? They had been promised liberty, had they not? That was no longer considered. Let them then become Roman Catholic again. It was their own fault. The Roman Catholics were allowed to bury their dead in the middle of the day, naturally. When the Huguenots assembled in their churches, then it was but natural that they sang psalms. We do that too, do we not? But suddenly, in the midst of that psalm singing, someone pounded hard upon the door, and outside it was shouted that they must immediately stop singing. Then at times the singing stopped in the middle of a line. Say, why did that happen? Just look once. A Roman Catholic procession, a Roman Catholic pageant draws near. When that passes the church, then that psalm singing must stop immediately. A heretic song and a Roman Catholic procession do not belong together. For that reason, they pounded upon the door of the church. The Huguenots dare not continue singing because they fear the vengeance of the Roman Catholics. You can realize that the Roman Catholics delighted in disturbing the religious services of the Huguenots as much as possible. Why not? Those Huguenots were only cursed heretics. The more they were teased, the better the Roman Catholic priests liked it. Often, Roman Catholic spies who took notice of every word sat under the sermons of the Huguenot ministers. Woe to the minister who dared to say one word against the Holy Virgin. Immediately he was accused and punished cruelly and severely. Some were scourged and maltreated. Others who had said a little more were imprisoned or banished. The Roman Catholics had a fierce grudge, especially against the Huguenot ministers. Due to all those banterings, the embitterment of the Huguenots no longer knew bounds. The Edict of Nantes was incessantly violated. But yea, what must they do against that? It was of no use to complain to the government. They were laughed at and scorned. Often they were deeply insulted. They had lost their strong fortresses. Just think of their last stronghold, La Rochelle, which had to surrender to Cardinal Richelieu in 1628. The Huguenots were not only nagged and vexed in all possible ways, but they were also pushed back. Injustice was shamefully heaped upon them. It was stipulated in the Edict of Nantes that the courts of justice would be half Roman Catholic and half Huguenots. That gradually changed. If a Huguenot judge died, then actually a new judge from the Huguenots had to be appointed. That was the agreement. But no, that did not happen. A Roman Catholic judge was appointed in that place so that finally the courts of justice consisted of Roman Catholic judges only. By that, the courts of justice were no longer courts of justice, but courts of injustice because the Huguenots never obtained their right, even though they were fully in the right. The Roman Catholics could do what they pleased. They were always acquitted, but the innocent Huguenots were always convicted. That was no longer any administration of justice. But against heretics, Rome was permitted to do everything. The Huguenots had their own schools where their children were taught by Huguenot teachers. That was stipulated by the Edict of Nantes. But changes were made also in this. If a Huguenot teacher died, then a Roman Catholic teacher was appointed in his place. In that way, the Huguenot schools were filled with Roman Catholic teachers who instructed the children in the Roman Catholic religion. That was unjust, but that happened. If a Huguenot worked in a Roman Catholic business or for a Roman Catholic employer where he earned a livelihood for his wife and children, then he was discharged and put out on the street. Such a family was plunged into the deepest poverty. Why? Did not that man perform his work well? Was he lazy, dishonest, or impudent? Why, no, just the opposite was true. But he was a Huguenot. Let him then become Roman Catholic again. That same thing still happens in our time. Just think of Spain. That has also happened recently in the Netherlands. Rome never changes. If there was a Huguenot store in a city or village where Roman Catholics were also customers, then those Roman Catholics were incited by the priests to no longer buy in those stores of the heretics. If they did not obey immediately, then they were threatened with the curse of the Roman Catholic Church. In that way, business declined fast, so that a decent livelihood was no longer to be made in that store. Do not the same things happen in Spain in the year 1975? The Edict of Nantes stipulated that the Huguenots would also have seats in the government of France. But Huguenot mayors were discharged. Huguenot members of the government were thrown out and reduced to beggary. Why? Because they were Huguenots. Let them then become Roman Catholic. Thus it went on for many years. Is it any wonder that thousands of Huguenots migrated to foreign countries? They moved to the Netherlands, to England, to Germany, or somewhere else where they would not be molested. The Roman Catholics became ever more impudent in their actions. They became ever more base and underhanded in their naggings. And why not? They were only cursed heretics anyway. Let them then become Roman Catholic. But it would become worse. The Jesuits took care of that. Their main object was extermination, destruction of the Huguenots. Not before would they rest. Let that food alone. That is for us. Rude fellows storm into the dining room of a Huguenot home where the family had just gathered around the table to partake of their dinner. Alas, the meal time was rudely disturbed. Father, mother, and children were driven away, and if they did not go away fast enough, then they were beaten away. Amid roaring laughter, those men seated themselves at the table and enjoyed the food which stood ready. If the meal was a little scanty, then the basement was upset to see if there was anything extra there. Closets were emptied and much was rudely destroyed. Chickens, pigs, or other animals of the livestock were slaughtered, and the mistress of the house was compelled to roast that flesh for those impudent intruders. If she did not do that fast enough, or if it was not prepared to suit them, and then she might receive a kick, or sometimes she was maltreated. Children who stood crying received a blow with the fist in the face, so that often the blood spurted out of their nose and mouth. And this happened daily in the homes of the Huguenots, at one time here, then again at another. Who are those scoundrels that conduct themselves in such an offensive manner? Scoundrels? Shame on you! They are soldiers of the royal army. They acted like beasts in the homes of the Huguenots. Beautiful, expensive furniture was irreparably damaged or deliberately smashed to pieces. At night, they sleep in the beds of father and mother or of the children. And the family itself, then? Ah, Let them sleep on the hay in the barn or upon the stone floor if there is no hay or straw on hand. The beds are for the soldiers of His Majesty, the King of France. Soldiers? They were a gang of robbers. But, is all that allowed? Is there then no justice left in France? Why are those families of decent French subjects thus tormented, robbed, and maltreated? Why? Ah, they are only Huguenots. They only belong to those accursed heretics. Let them then become Roman Catholic. Next to that tormented Huguenot family lives a Roman Catholic family. Those French soldiers, those dragoons, do not come there. Those Roman Catholic citizens are treated by the imperial soldiers with politeness and courtesy. But in the families of the Huguenots, their maltreatment, plundering, and cruelty was the order of the day. When a Huguenot father, being provoked to the limit, could no longer control himself and resist, what then? Well, then he was beaten to death, or hanged on the pear tree which stood in the front of the house. The soldiers of His Majesty, the King of France, did not permit themselves to be insulted by a heretic. Nothing of the kind. We write 1681. In order to compel the Huguenots to become Roman Catholic again, strong detachments of French horsemen or cavalrymen were sent to those regions where many Huguenots still lived. Those French horsemen were called dragoons. They were quartered only with the Huguenots. The Roman Catholics were exempt from quartering. The Huguenots have suffered terribly at the hands of those dragoons. And they were no longer boss in their own house. The compelled quartering of dragoons is known in history as the Dragonades. It is readily understood that many Huguenots became discouraged, and being brought to despair, gave up the struggle. There have been those who finally became Roman Catholic. Then they were rid of that misery. It is true, those people forgot the Bible word, be faithful unto death. But, considered from the human side, we can understand it. Life was made unbearable for them. Thousands and again thousands who would not become Roman Catholic again took to flight. They left their house or their farm, their village, their country, and travel to foreign lands, at times being bereft of everything. Happily, they were cordially received abroad. There, those poor wretches finally obtained rest. But in consequence of this, France lost thousands of its best subjects. Louis XIV realized that too. For that reason, a year later, in 1682, the flight abroad was forbidden. It was not necessary that they fled. Why did not those obstinate ones become Roman Catholic? Then they would no longer be vexed. Then henceforth they would be left alone. Then they could continue to live undisturbed. It was their own fault that they were thus vexed and oppressed. Why did they not give in? 3 years later, in 1685, the Edict of Nantes was revoked by Louis XIV. Although before that time it was no longer considered, yet in name it still existed. However, since October 1685, the Edict of Nantes was no longer in existence. The public worship of the Huguenots was prohibited. That means they were no longer allowed to assemble in their churches. Yea, worse, the houses of prayer of the Huguenots were demolished. More than 800 churches in France were demolished. The schools of the Huguenots were closed. The children were taken away from the Huguenots and educated in Roman Catholic institutions or monasteries. The preachers and the teachers were sent to the dreadful galleys, where after a few years they died a miserable death. The persecution raged in all severity. Other preachers were hanged or broken upon the wheel, which means they were tortured in a horrible manner. And fleeing was forbidden. Everywhere soldiers stood on guard at the border. Whoever still fled and was caught on the way was sent relentlessly to the galleys. And yet, after the repeal of the Edict of Nantes, more than 500,000 Huguenots have fled. They defied the prohibition of the king. Leaving everything behind, they traveled over impassable routes across the border. Many of them succumbed on the way. Little children were packed into suitcases, and in that way were carried across the border. Some disguised themselves as pilgrims, and in that way were able to escape out of France. Really, here was fulfilled that which is written in the Epistle to the Hebrews. They wandered about in sheepskins and goatskins, being destitute, afflicted, tormented. They wandered in deserts and in mountains, and in dens and caves of the earth. Hebrews 11:37-38. Those fugitives were called refugees. Also in the Netherlands, thousands of refugees have been charitably taken in and cared for. Entire portions of a city were built for those poor indigent refugees. The Netherlands assisted them with a heart full of compassion. Walloon churches were established everywhere where the refugees could hold their divine services. 200 preachers came to Holland, and they preached in the Walloon churches. But those poor refugees could not support those preachers, could they? They themselves had nothing left. No fear, that was not required of them. Those Huguenot preachers received their annual salary from the Dutch government. Holland profited by that because the best part of France's population fled abroad. They were diligent, industrious people. Many French names still remind us of the refugees. France itself became impoverished. And yet, Louis XIV continued relentlessly in the way which he had taken. Rome continued to instigate Louis in all sorts of ways. He was lavishly praised and exalted by the Roman Catholic priests. One of them said that our heart beat with admiration for Louis's piety. Let our applauses resound unto the heaven. For such flattery, we have only one word, bah. Do you see that the Roman Catholic Church is not guiltless? On the contrary, Rome is the instigator of all the atrocities which took place in France. In that which still follows, we can be brief. As we have seen, hundreds of thousands of Huguenots fled, but not all went abroad. In the south of France lies a mountain range called the Cevennes. They stayed in those inaccessible regions. There they founded churches. There they came together in caves and dens. They called themselves the Churches of the Desert. But also there they were not left in peace. Louis XIV sent troops to that place. The secret meetings of the Huguenots were scattered. Dreadful massacres were committed there by the soldiers. At times, 300 to 400 people, including women and children, were struck down. Finally, a terrible revolt broke out in the Cévennes, which is recorded in history as the Camisard War. This lasted from 1702 to 1705. Louis XIV tried to suppress the revolt with severe cruelty. Appalling scenes have been enacted there. It is told that the soldiers let ships fully loaded with Camisards sink in the Loire River, so that all that were in those ships drowned miserably. According to some writers, more than 100,000 people have perished in that war. The Camisard War terminated in 1705. That last desperate attempt to resist was also smothered in blood. And yet, Louis XIV did not fully succeed in exterminating Protestantism. A few have always remained, but he was almost successful. And the consequences? They were irreparable for France itself. It is true, Rome had conquered, but at what a price? Recession, poverty, revolution. We hope to say one thing and another about that in a future chapter. Louis XIV. He was called the Sun King. Why? His reign had not been so beneficial to France. He had not brought the sun of prosperity, but the night of adversity upon his realm. Bloody wars, both foreign and domestic, weakened his realm. Later, that has been avenged. We shall hear of that. His sinful life terminated in 1715. What must that have been for him, when he had to appear before God's judgment seat with hands that dripped with the blood of God's children? It would have been better for him if he had never been born. And then to think that God's wrath and holy vengeance shall rest upon him forever. Dreadful!